This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. With thousands of miles of new natural gas pipelines going in the ground in Appalachia and other regions, the government agency in charge of gas line infrastructure recently asked for input on how to improve the pipeline approval process. The comment period has been open since late April. As Nancy Andrews reports, hundreds of people and organizations have submitted comments to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC.
FERC is reevaluating its 1999 policy statement that governs natural gas pipeline infrastructure. In a 58-page notice, the agency is asking for input: how to determine the need for pipelines, eminent domain, and how to evaluate environmental issues. Groups, companies, and individuals have made hundreds of comments so far. Everything from a form letter submitted more than 400 times by individual members of the Texans for Natural Gas to a handwritten note from a Nevada man asking that climate change be taken into account when considering new pipelines. The Appalachian Trail Conservancy, representing the 30 clubs that take care of the trail, weighed in. Laura Belleville is the organization's vice president of conservation and trail programs.
So at one point in time, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy staff were reviewing upwards of 10 different pipeline proposals that were going across the AT. You know, we certainly stepped back and said, well, geez, how many do we really need? How many of these pipelines really are speculative versus, as a society, what do we need to sustain the energy resources that we demand?
Currently, FERC determines public need for a pipeline by determining if companies are willing to sign up to use the pipeline. These agreements can be from the pipeline company itself in the form of affiliates. There's no requirement to indicate who benefits from the pipeline or who the end user will be, whether it's people heating homes in the U.S. or fueling a factory in China.
Really? Should the United States be sacrificing its own public lands and, in some cases, private lands for energy needs overseas? That's a much bigger picture question that I think the American public has the right to weigh in on.
Of course, comments from industry perspectives are also being submitted. Atlantic Coast Pipeline spokesperson Aaron Ruby says the current system works, but could be improved. The 604-mile-long Atlantic Coast Pipeline was publicly announced in 2014 and is now FERC-approved and in the construction phases.
Now, we're here, and we're at the end of the process. And so we were able to kind of successfully navigate it, but there certainly are decisions along the way, and there are aspects of the process that could be done in a more reasonable time frame.
While some want the process to speed up, others want more oversight from FERC. That's true of 75-year-old farmer Curtis Johnson, who doesn't object to pipelines, but does take issue with the construction practices.
Yeah, some people just think it's dirt out there, but to me, it's in my heart. The land is a connection to my past. Great-great-grandfather, my grandfather, and my dad and everybody, we all took care of this land and we all tried to improve it. It's just, the land to me is everything.
Johnson submitted a letter to FERC explaining problems with his soil, with good topsoil mixed up with subsoils like clay on his Ohio farm. He wants landowners to have a say before construction starts, and he wants to see FERC on the ground during construction to make sure it's done right.
Say, I'm not a vacationer guy. I've sat on my back porch now. The crops are growing, and to me, it's like, I guess some people like to be at the lake and watch the waves and stuff out there, but I can watch the waves here with my grain. And
Johnson isn't alone in his love for his land. Mark Jarrell, who's having his Penn Springs property taken by Mountain Valley Pipeline through eminent domain, is among thousands who've been sued by pipeline companies. He reads part of his letter to FERC.
FERC should wield their power of eminent domain as seriously as a judge in a death penalty case. I wish you could hear the stories, see the frustration, the anger, the despair, and the misery of people suffering from your decisions. There are affected people here who've been on their land since just after the Revolutionary War. I myself have at least seven ancestors who fought in the Revolutionary War within 25 miles of my property, and I know they would be rolling over in their graves to think the government they helped establish has such little regard for private property rights. Eminent domain for private gain is wrong.
FERC also asked for specific examples on how to improve. Sarah Gronman, a retired history professor in Brooklyn, submitted 6 letters. She says even as an experienced researcher with a PhD, she could barely figure out how to navigate FERC's databases and website.
People can't persuasively go into hearings or write letters and just wave their arms in the air, I don't want this, I don't want this. They've got to say, and here are the toxins that will be dug up at the harbor floor, which is an example for us. These are the whale migrations that will be stopped. Right? This is the amount of methane that will accelerate our climate change that will be released. And if you can't find those details, how are you going to, you know, make your argument?
While access to information is a concern of Gronemans, North Carolina activist Belinda Joyner would like to see citizen advisory councils created. And she wants to see more of FERC, too.
Listen, and even sometime you have to come out from those offices and just look for yourself to see what's going on.
Many commenters called on FERC to hold public meetings on the policy change. None are scheduled. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Nancy Andrews.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is collecting comments on their pipeline approval process until July 25th. Find more information on wvpublic.org. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Some areas of fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today with highs in the 80s, partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 60s, partly sunny on Friday, a chance of rain and thunderstorms in the afternoon with highs in the 80s, chance of rain and thunderstorms tomorrow night with lows in the 60s, and they continue on Saturday with highs in the 70s and low 80s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. West Virginia University marked the start of a new phase of research aimed at recovering rare earth elements from coal and its byproducts. Brittany Patterson has more from yesterday's ribbon-cutting ceremony.
There are 17 rare earth elements found on the planet. They're used in everything from cell phones to stealth bombers. Chances are you have at least one in your pocket right now.
I guarantee 95% of us in the room have some rare earths in our pocket or somewhere on our person.
Brian Anderson is head of WVU's Energy Institute. The problem, he told the crowd, is that as their name hints, rare earth elements are rarely found concentrated in one place. For the last 2 years, researchers at WVU, in conjunction with the Department of Energy and private partners, have experimented with extracting these minerals from acid mine drainage, which is the most abundant pollutant in West Virginia waters. What started as a theory and then moved to beakers in a lab is now a refined process at the Rare Earth Extraction Facility, located at the National Research Center for Coal and Energy on WVU's Evansdale campus in Morgantown. At the pilot plant, sludge from the nearby Omega Mine in Grafton is treated with a series of acidic chemicals. Then, it's filtered through up to 100 milk carton-sized mixers. At every stage, the rare earth elements separate out.
So by the time you get to the end of, we don't know how many right now, whether it's 10, 20, or 100 of these units, you're going to have pure rare earth element.
Paul Zimkavich is director of the West Virginia Water Research Institute and the lead developer behind this project. He says this facility will help researchers commercialize the process so that one day, potentially every abandoned coal mine could be a source of these elements. His team estimates Appalachia's coal sludge could produce up to 800 tons of these elements every year. That's more than $190 million. Anderson told the crowd that if the pilot project is successful, it could help the U.S. secure a much-needed domestic source for these elements, rather than be dependent on countries like China and India, which are the world leaders in rare earth element extraction.
So this could go a long way forward in creating a new economy, a new economic opportunity for West Virginia and this region, and treat acid mine drainage and turn it into a financial boon instead of a financial burden.
Researchers said they hope to be able to scale up the project for commercial use within 5 years. For now, they're celebrating this first step. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson in Morgantown.
A federal grand jury has added an obstruction of justice charge against a suspended West Virginia Supreme Court justice already facing a 22-count indictment. Dave Mistich has more.
U.S. Attorney Mike Stewart says in a news release, a grand jury on Tuesday issued a new 23-count indictment against 47-year-old Alan Loffrey. It supersedes an earlier indictment. The new count alleges that between December 4, 2017 and May 24th, Loffrey knowingly and corruptly endeavored to influence, obstruct, and impede a federal grand jury investigation, tried to deflect attention from himself, and blamed others for the alleged improper use of state court funds and property. The indictment includes previous charges of mail and wire fraud, making false statements to an FBI agent, and witness tampering. A legislative committee is considering whether impeachment proceedings are necessary. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Morgantown.
A Kentucky hog farm operator has fired 3 workers after an animal rights group videotaped alleged incidents of animal abuse at the farm. Nicole Irwin has more.
Tosh Farm CEO Jimmy Tosh said in an email he is taking action in response to allegations of animal cruelty at one of his farms. An undercover investigator from the nonprofit Mercy for Animals documented the abuses while working for 4 months at a Franklin, Kentucky hog farm earlier this year. The farm is leased and managed by Tosh Farms to raise pigs for slaughter in Louisville's JBS Swift plant. The activist group Mercy for Animals filed a complaint to the local district attorney's office Tuesday for legal action against behaviors including repeatedly smashing a piglet's head against the floor. Jimmy Tosh says that 3 employees have since been fired. Outside service people have been added on a regular schedule to monitor operations, and a third-party consultant has been flown to the facility to tour the unit. Tosh says the consultant's recommendations will be implemented as soon as possible. Tosh says all employees are required to sign a zero-tolerance animal abuse policy. Those identified in the video have been terminated for behavior that is considered intentional abuse. Mercy for Animals is calling for additional action from JBS, one of the largest meat and pork producers in the global market, to ban gestation crates, metal enclosures in which a farm sow used for breeding may be kept during pregnancy, and for JBS to put an end to painful mutilations. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Nicole Irwin.
WFPL's Ryan Van Veltzer contributed to this story. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.